to get back. I need some get back.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
For African peoples, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve. And at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation. Those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children, we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
This is an excerpt from a poem called Why Is We Americans? But reality is an excerpt on television. Why is we Americans? Why is we Americans? Boo-dee-da. 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 Be de 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 boo de boo de boo boo boo. What I want is me, for real. I want me and myself, and what that is what I be and what I see and feel, and who is me and the what it is and who it is and when it me is what it be. I'm gonna be here if I want, like I said, self-determination. But I ain't come from a foolish tribe. We wants the mule, the land. You can make it 300 years of blue chip stock in the entire operation. We want to be paid in a central bank, the average worker, farmer wage for all those years we gave it free. Plus, we want damages for all the killings and the fraud, the lynchings, the missing justice, the lies and frame-ups, the unwarranted jailings, the tar and feathering, the character and race assassinations, historical slander, ugly caricatures. For every Sambo, step and fetch it flick, we want to be paid. For every hurtful thing you did or said, for all the land you took, for all the rapes, all the Rosewoods and Black Wall Street you destroyed, all the miseducation, jobs lost, segregated shacks we lived in, the disease that ate and killed us, for all the mad police that drilled us, for all the music and dances you stole, the styles, the language, the hip clothes you cop, the careers you stopped. All these are suits. Specific litigation as represent we, be like we, for reparations for damages paid to the Afro-American nation. Boo-dee-da, boo-dee-da, boo-dee-da. We want education for all of us and anyone else in the black pelt hurt by slavery, for all the native peoples, even them poor white people you show all the time is funny, all them Abners and Daisy Mays, them Beverly Hillbillies who never got to know Beverly Hills, who never got to Harvard on their grandfather's wheels. We want reparations for them, right on, for the Mexicans whose land you stole, for all of North Mexico, you call it Texas, Arizona, California, New Mexico, Colorado, all that, all that, all that, all that. Be-dee-da, doo-doo. Bap, 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 all that you got to give up. Autonomy and reparations to the Chicanos and the Native Americans whose soul you ripped out with their land. Give self-determination, regional autonomy. That's what my we is asking, and they're going to do the same when they demand it like us again in their own exploited name. Yeah, the education, that's right. 200 years. We want a central stash, a central bank with democratically elected trustees and a board elected by us all to map out from the referendum we set up what we want to spend it on to build that Malcolm sense self-determination as self-reliance and self-respect and self-defense, the will of what the good Dr. Du Bois beat on, true self-consciousness, simply the psychology of freedom. Boo-dee-da, boo-dee-da, pee-dee-da, boo-dee-da, da, ba, 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 boo-dee, boo-dee, boo, boo, boo. Then we can talk about being American. Then we can listen without the undercurrent of desire to first set your ass on fire. We will only talk of voluntary unity, of autonomy, as vective arms of self-determination if there is democracy in you. That is where it will be shown. This is the only way we as Americans, singers and dancers and drummers and actors and runners and elegant heartbeats of the sun's flame, but we is also at the end of our silence and sit down. We is at the end of being under your ignorant smell, your intentional hell. Either give us our lives or plan to forfeit your own.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. This is your host, William Rogers, and we welcome you to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here, as you know, every Tuesday evening from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the TimeForAnAwakening.com radio network. We thank you so much for your coming and listening with us today and being a review that and just have a sort of an open forum, but with a specific focus, and so talk about and deal with. Normally, our approach is we'll take a look at a subject and we will try to explore that, and we've been doing that now. So we want to tonight take a look at and use sort of as a theme Dr. John Henry Clark's quote, "History is a clock." And we start our program, all of our programs here at the Black Reality Think Tank Network usually has that clip in it. And I think maybe it might be a good time to take a look at that clip and see what it really means for us, and how is history a clock, and what is it that it benefits us in doing. So that's one of the things that we are going to do. This is a call-in format for those of you that are listening via the internet. We welcome you to call us at area code 215-490-9832. I repeat, 215-490-5832. Just give us a call with your comments or just suggestions, and you can also listen via that as well. So we welcome you. Please do that. We'd love to have you give your ideas and your thoughts as it relates to some of the subjects that we're going to talk about tonight. I also want to recommend to our audience that you be mindful of the fact that your telephones, those of you who are listening on the telephone, that your phones are very sensitive, your phone microphones are very sensitive. So sometimes a lot of background noise, just the slightest movement can be heard, and it sort of distracts sometimes those that might be talking or discussing. So keep that in mind and kind of mute those, and then when we get ready to talk or ask a question, you can unmute that at that point, and we can definitely engage you in a conversation with us. So again, we are here every Tuesday. We have other programs on the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and we also have other programs on the Time for an Awakening system platform. The Time for Awakening platform system has several other programs that, and we'll talk about those. But we also want to talk about the ones that we have. This is our Tuesday night program, and we're real excited about it. We have another program that airs on Thursday. It airs on the Block Talk Radio Network system. It's called Warrior's Way. And that program is dynamic. It's coming up one this Thursday. It airs at 6 o'clock. And you can simply go to the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page, and you can see the information about that program, and also the link. You'll be able to see the link and link on to that program. And then on Saturday, we have two programs on Saturday. We have Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe with Mr. Wanda Chambers. And that program, Warrior's Way, is Brother Kwasi Kraft. He is the host of that. LaWanda Chambers is the host of the one on Thursday, on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And she's also on Blog Talk Radio as well. And then at 6 o'clock, we have the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with hosts Dr. Janine James, Brother Cujo Robinson, and Sister Dee Dee Conley. And that program airs from 6 to 8 on Saturday evening. So we're busy, and we are trying to provide our people with conversation, a platform to discuss things that we can do to create agendas that will work and to help our people and to help our children. And so we're trying to do our part, and we hope that we can be successful, and we really appreciate you supporting that. And so we don't take that lightly at all. And so tonight we're going to talk about several things, but as you know, we always like to do an ancestral profile because we need to take a look at others that have gone before us and who were trying to do the same things that we were doing, are doing now. And history sometimes has been good to them, and sometimes they have been pushed down into the archives and don't too many people know about them. But at the same time, their work has been extremely powerful. And so tonight, I am going to talk about a brother that very clearly is one that maybe not too many people have heard of, but his work has been extremely, extremely significant. His name is Rudolph Dunbar. Rudolph Dunbar, very powerful brother. Rudolph Dunbar was a conductor. He was a clarinetist and a composer. Dunbar was born on November the 26th, 1907, in Guyana. At the age of 9, his musical genius apparent, he was invited to serve as a clarinetist in the British Guyana Militia Band. After a brief apprenticeship for Stella Young Afro-Guyanese and Portuguese Guyanese musicians, Dunbar performed with the band until he was 13 years old. Over the course of his career, he became the first black man to conduct an orchestra in England, Germany, Poland, and Russia. 19-year-old Dunbar left his native Guyana for New York City in 1926 to enroll in the Institute of Musical Art, now called the Juilliard School. While studying at the Institute, he participated in the Harlem Renaissance music activities, working with the leading composers like William Grant Steele. And while working with other Renaissance musicians, Dunbar also developed as a jazz musician. Now, there's a specific point that makes Brother Dunbar extremely significant, brother, for us. In early September of 1945, amid the rubble of bombed-out Berlin, the Afro-Caribbean conductor, Rudolph Dunbar, stepped onto a podium and bowed to an enthusiastic audience of German citizens and American military personnel. It was the first Berlin Philharmonic concert to be led by foreign musicians before World War II. The orchestra had gathered in an old movie theater functioning as a makeshift concert hall in the newly designated American zone of the city. Obviously, first on the program was the Star Spangled Banner. Then came a fairly standard set of orchestra pieces with Carl Martin Van Weber doing Tchaikovsky's overtures and his Pathetique Symphony. But one piece stood out from the rest, William Grant Steele's Afro-American Symphony, when it premiered in 1931 in Rochester, New York. It was the first symphony by a black American to be performed by a major orchestra. Steele's symphony received a robust round of performances in the United States in the 1930s. The decade was a watershed for black composers like him, who finally managed to persuade powerful American ensembles to perform their music. The Afro-American Symphony, which was quickly followed by Florence Price's Symphony in E minor, 1933, and William Dauphin's Negro Folk Symphony in 1934. These works appeared frequently on concert programs in America at the time, and then suddenly just disappeared. It was Dunbar, a clarinetist who had studied at the Institute of Musical Art, as I said, Juilliard School, who brought back Steele's music in New York. The two had struck up a friendship before Dunbar set out in 1924 for Europe, where he studied and performed in over a decade. A student of renowned musicians like the conductor Felix Weingartner and the clarinetist Louis Cahuzac, he was steeped into the world of European art music, but was also a committed black activist. He ran in the same circles as black Marxists and Pan-Africanists like George Padmore. Dunbar had long made his plan to work against white supremacy, whether in the form of Nazism or British imperialism. In fact, he had already performed Steele's Afro-American Symphony for its European audience at the London Philharmonic at the Royal Albert Hall to raise funds. Now check this out, to raise funds for black soldiers who were fighting against the Nazis. Dunbar was invited to perform in Berlin, whom the victorious allies had appointed the Philharmonic's conductor, and who was also an anti-Nazi dissident and resistance fighter who aided German Jews fleeing the Third Reich. The message of Dunbar's debut could not be clearer. Classical music could not be divorced from a global fight against racism. The work of racial justice in the arts has always been a global effort. Europe's role in the fight, however, deserves closer inspection. spurned by the barriers placed on them by white-dominated institutions in the United States, Black American composers and musicians have long perpetrated the idea that European audiences were more welcoming. Writing in the New York Age in 1908, the Black American composer Clarence Cameron White said as much. On every side, you find the European musician and music lover as well realizes that music is too broad and too universal to be circumscribed by the complexion of the skin or the texture of the hair. There is some truth to White's claim. Some of the earliest performances of William Grant Steele's music had taken place in Paris, and he played at some of the largest orchestra houses in Paris. And he's often led music for some of the most powerful dignitaries of Europe. One of the things that he had done is he played a song that was created by a Black composer called The Ordering of Moses. It was another work by a Black composer that would soon disappear for decades. And so this brother, who was very powerful, William Randolph Rudolph Dunbar, powerful composer. And he, as I said, played throughout Europe, and he enjoyed a very illustrious career playing. Dunbar, what would be now called Afrocentric in his approach, and he always promoted and performed the music of Black composers. He always did that. He also used his influence to highlight classical music pieces that honored African and Caribbean countries as they evolved from the colonial rule to independence in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. William Rudolph Dunbar died of cancer on June 10th, 1988, in his home in London, England. He was 80 years old at the time of his death. Very good, brother. These are the kind of people that we want to highlight who have gone against the odds. Now, I'm sure you know what that must have been like for him to do that in Nazi Germany at that time. But very clearly, he did not let that stop him. And we really appreciate the work of brothers like that. So tonight, my brothers and sisters, we're going to take a look at some of the things that are affecting us right now. And one of the things that I think is very important and very critical is that everything that we attempt to do to move forward, there's always going to be something thrown into the game to distort us or to keep us from moving forward. That's just goes with the territory of white supremacy and racism in this country, and we consistently see that. And one of the things that I think I want to start off with, and we had one of our programs on last Saturday to talk about the Texas abortion case. And I want to talk about the very subtleness of how this is really just a racial issue. And they did that. They did a very good job. Get a chance, go into our archive, all our programs are archived, and you can listen to that Saturday broadcast. It was very well done, professionals that were talking about that abortion situation and what it really meant. But there's just a couple of things that I want to add to it because it's important. And I add it only because of the fact that it deals with, you know, how subtle racism can be interjected into things and, you know, how it's always been done and how white supremacy creeps into it when it seems like it's not really about that. It is. And so this new Texas law that bans most abortions is using basically a method that was employed by Texas and other states to enforce the Jim Crow laws in the 19th and the 20th century that was aimed at disenfranchising African Americans. And as you well know, Texas is one of the most racist states in America. A lot of them, but Texas stands out. That's why they call them the Lone Star State. And Texas is well known for its racism and the things that it's done. So nevertheless, rather than giving state officials, such as the police and other state officials, the right to enforce laws, the Texas law here that we're talking about instead allows enforcement by any person other than an officer or an employee of a state or a local government. And this enforcement mechanism really relies on citizens rather than on the government to enforce the law. Now, you know the problem that that will cause. And this approach to enforcement is what's known by legal professionals as an in-the-run idea to privatize state enforcements of the law. And so by using this method of enforcement, the state officials obviously are shielded from being sued or any kind of action that might be taken against them because they created something. Now, the U.S. Justice Department has filed suit already against the state on the ground that the law violates a woman's constitutionally protected right to terminate a pregnancy before fetal viability. And in this suit, the Justice Department specifically cites one of the cases that I'm talking about that was brought up over a Texas Jim Crow law that excluded blacks from participating in primaries, which was struck down by the Supreme Court in 1944. Following the Reconstruction era in the South, Texas, like so many other states, had banned African Americans from voting in party primaries and a law adopted in 1923. This was an example of Jim Crow, a system of laws and customs that institutionalized anti-black discrimination in the United States. And that's what they were done. Now, when the state law was challenged before the Supreme Court, and it was eventually struck down by a Supreme Court case called Nixon versus Herndon, which was in 1927, the Texas legislature responded in 1928 with a tricky maneuver, much like the one in the Texas abortion law. Texas repealed the offending statute and enacted legislation that specifically delegated to political parties the power to determine qualification of voters in primary election, thus seeking to take the state out of the equation. That's what's going on right now. By putting the power in the hands of private parties, allowing them to obviously discriminate against and prevent African Americans from voting, the state sought to avoid legal rules based on the Constitution that required state action before a law could be struck down. But essentially, the state contracted out the dirty work of denying black Texans the right to vote. So in the landmark 1944 ruling of another Supreme Court case called Smith versus Allwright, the Supreme Court looked behind that law and gutted out that trickery, as expressed by future Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, who argued that case before the court. The court ruled that no matter how uninvolved the state of Texas attempted to be, primary elections involved state action sufficient for the purposes of a successful lawsuit under the 14th Amendment. The court concluded that the constitutional right to vote is not to be nullified by a state through casting this electoral process in a form which permits a private organization to practice racial discrimination in this election. And so what I'm doing is I'm giving you the racist history of what Texas is doing in 2021 to try to do some same kinds of things with this abortion law. So there's a specific case called Terry versus Adams. And this case is really unique because during the first half of the 20th century, the U.S. Supreme Court heard a series, as I said, of significant Texas voting rights cases, which collectively ended the white primary system. There was a system called the white primaries. It was established in many areas of the South after the Civil War, where white primaries were unofficial. Pre-election polls that were barred to African Americans that effectively prevented them from having any type of political influence whatsoever. So in 1950, African Americans, Willie Melton, his name was, he was a farmer, and Arizona Fleming, who was a businesswoman, began a suffrage movement in Fort Bend County that led to legal action. John Terry and other black county residents agreed to lend their names as plaintiffs in a class action lawsuit that was filed against A.J. Adams and other officers of the, what's known as the Jaybird Democratic Association. The Jaybird Democratic Association functioned as a white-only political organization that operated unofficially to do things like have straw elections to select Democratic nominees for local elections. Since most Texans consistently voted for Democrats, then more than likely, if this was the case, these individuals would be the ones that would be elected to the general office. The case was heard in the U.S. District Court in Houston, Texas, and the court ruled in favor of the plaintiffs because the law, the Jaybirds, were definitely clearly operating as a political party and therefore subject to state and federal law, sort of protecting voters' rights. The ruling enabled the county's African Americans to vote in an upcoming Jaybird primary election. An appeal was filed by the Jaybirds, which was heard in 1951 by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, who overturned it, the original judgment, in 1952. And so the local supporters raised funds to enable an appeal to be filed. And so the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments in January of 1953. And in the case of Terry versus Adams, upheld the original running of the plaintiffs. And so by 1959, the Jaybird Democrats Association had given up that fight. So the Democratic Party, as you see, were fighting, and they're attempting to do this now with this abortion case. And they are doing it and resurrecting the Jim Crow laws to do it. The new law right now, which is formally called the Texas Heartbeat Act, constitutes a similar attempt by the state to privatize enforcement of state policy, all in an effort to prevent legal moves that would stop it from going into effect. Texas has resurrected a decade-old technique that it used during the Jim Crow era to insulate its discriminatory laws from constitutional review in the courts. And by delegating enforcement authority to private individuals, Texas has transformed its population into a cadre of private law enforcers. Now that the federal government has sued the state over the law, the courts will be in a position to review the constitutionality of the statute. Now, the real deal here is if this law stays, it can be applied to all kinds of other things, not just abortion. They can apply it to different kinds. Somebody can arrest you, for instance, if you, let's say, teach black history, and they don't want you to teach black history, as we get into that critical race theory. A private person can arrest you for that if these laws are allowed to go into effect. So Texas is being forced, and the Texas voters are being forced to agree to whether to allow this Jim Crow law from the 1920s to be instituted into Texas legal system of 2021. And that clearly is a very quiet but potent system that can be used to do that. There are think tank organizations that work in political realms that sit down and come up with these ideas and put them in place and sell these to officials. And you know, Texas is hostile, you know, when it comes to things of that nature, and very clearly this act. So this is one of the things that's going on now, and it has gotten a lot of people's attention, and a lot of people are standing up and attempting to fight that. But that's one of the quiet racist acts that's being done if that's allowed to be passed. And very clearly, we have to be aware of that. And it's happening around us all the time. And we as African people have to be careful in our community what happens, how things can be seeped into our existence as they have always been. And there are so many others like that as well. And we want to make sure that we can call attention to those here at the Black Reality Think Tank and other places do the same thing. Others need to call that stuff together because, as I said, it's potent, it's destructive, and sometimes we wake up too late. I recall W-2 was one of those that we went to sleep on, and we allowed that to creep into our public policy program system, and we didn't fight it. And we could have fought and stopped W-2 because it was horrible system to our families, Black families, and AFDC. We know the damage it did. But those could have been stopped at another level if we would have just been more politically astute. So that's kind of what I wanted to kind of, not just the abortion, I just want to talk about the seeping in of that. And we look at it in education. Critical race theory is seeping into the system. If we allow that to come in and don't stop that as a people, we're going to have a problem when we're trying to teach our kids and our young folk about their culture. Because they are consistently putting out literature and doing things in a negative way. And the promotion of today's program, I put a book out that was done in the 1950s that was teaching kids their ABCs. But the language that they were using was derogatory to us, and the way that it was being displayed was derogatory. Little Black Sambo was a school book. We used that in school. I was in school in the 1950s, in elementary school. I remember we had to read that as a reading book, Little Black Sambo. How did that creep into the system like that, you know, without somebody starting it up and saying, no, this can't happen? And there's another way it's doing. I was looking at one of my grandkids' books, and they were talking. It was kind of like a social studies book. And they were talking about the people of the world. And this was an elementary school. This was like a fourth grade student. And they had a map of the world. And then each little area of the world, they were talking about the culture of that area. And so when it got to like in the European world, the Dutch, they had the little Dutch kids with the Dutch shoes on that they normally always use. In the Latin American world, they had the, you know, the Mexicans, they had the their cultural icons that they use to do that. Canada, they had the same kind of thing. Paris, they had the Eiffel Tower with your kids walking around with barrettes on and tams that the French use and wear. China, they had, you know, their cultural icons with their kids and families together and operating together to talk about that thing. Well, they went to Africa. The African icon was an elephant, a giraffe, and a lion, and a monkey, a chimpanzee, and a gorilla. That was the representation of Africa, as though Africa is the only place that has elephants and gorillas and so forth. And so it was displayed to show that. So I went to the mother of my grandkid and told her to write a note and asked them meeting with her and talk to her about using images like that. And she did. And she said it's not her choice. That's a book that MPS subscribed for them to have. And so I told her at some point, you know, maybe with some other parents, if you want it, you need to make a campaign out of that because that's disgusting. So I'm not sure where it is now, but I'm asking her each day how that moves. So those are ways as well that it subtly does that. And this has been going on for a long time. This is just not happening. This has been that way for years, just to destroy the image of African people and look at it in subtle ways. So you ended up actually using it yourself, like we see in music today and in the motion pictures. And, a lot of black films are being made, a lot of streaming movies on HBO and streaming movies on Stars are being used. I don't know how many of you have been seeing that thing about that 50 Cent does on Stars. I don't know about you, but I think it's horrible. And it's just a suggestion that this is the way black people live. And I mean, I'm sure that there are people that do live that way, but that's not representative of the majority of our people. And then some of the ones that depict women, that's being done by women, and some of those streaming movies that's done is very horrible. And so that's where I want to go tonight with that a little bit. So I'm going to ask you, the audience, what are your thoughts? And then there's another question I want to ask our audience, and you can be thinking of an answer. And that is the, I want to ask you to do a report card on your president. Where is he? How would you grade him right now? And what do you think that he is happening? Brother Timothy, remember your mic now, please.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I would like to do that. And let's start with you, Brother Timothy.
First of all,
let me ask you this. Grade Joe Biden, A through F, and then just grade him, and then we'll come back and talk about the grade. How would you grade Joe Biden right now?
B minus C plus.
All right, I'm gonna come back to you.
And you know what? Since you and I are undergraduate, I give him, that's a 2.5, 2.7 average.
All right. I'm gonna ask you. Come back and ask you why. Let me ask Brother White. Brother Herbie White, grade Joe Biden for me.
No.
Hello?
Yeah. There's someone talking. Okay.
Oh, okay. Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and to everyone else.
Good evening.
Far as Joe Biden is concerned, I can't see voting for anybody that lynched my ancestors.
Of course, you were chauffeured.
Okay.
That's what grade he gets.
So that's a fat right out F. Okay. All right. Good.
If I'm going to get lower than F than that.
All right. I'm going to come back to you. And then 773, would you like to grade the President of the United States right now based on your perspective? 773? Not right now? Okay. All right. 404, how would you grade the president? Just grade him, and we'll come back to your discussion about it. Just grade him, and we'll...
I give him a D minus, Pop.
D minus? Okay, all right. We'll come back to that. We'll come back. All right. 919-224, how do you grade Joe Biden? 919-224. Okay, no comment. All right, no problem. 919-638, how would you grade Joe Biden? No thoughts right now. Okay, that's okay. I just want to get, you know, your person. Sister Didi, do you have a grade for him?
I do, Doc Rogers, but if I say it, they might shut the show down.
Okay, all right. We can't be no bit worse than Brother White's. You know, he's in a flat out F. And that's okay. This is your opinion based on what you're doing, what you see. All right, no problem. We can hold that for a minute. Brother Kwasi, what's your grade of Joe Biden?
I'm going to give him a D minus.
D minus or B minus, you said?
D
Which one did you say, D?
I said D minus.
D minus, okay. All right, good enough. Okay, so Brother Timothy, the subtleness of racism in public policy areas in this country, what are your kind of, what kind of your thoughts? Because I saw something interesting yesterday I didn't realize this, but we'll talk about this later, is that Philadelphia has just about as many murders as Chicago.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do, sir. Yes,
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. But anyway, go right ahead.
Well, I'm talking, when you talk about the policies of America, I think about race. And when you talk about race, I know where we're at in the race. And I know that it's stacked up against us economically, politically, and socially. Okay? And I know that we as a race had an example of Marcus Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Booker T. Washington. It goes further for Du Bois. And I'm going to say this, that we have to do better with the outsized effect of racism.
Mm-hmm.
See, you have a policy, but the policy was strong with Marcus Garvey. The policy was strong with Booker T. Washington, mm-hmm. Elijah Muhammad. See, so we have to take care of ourselves, Dr. Rogers. Can I say something, Dr. Rogers?
Mm-hmm.
I could be about black people all my life to the end. I ain't got to be around nobody but black people. I can go from here to Africa, go from here to the Caribbean, Jamaica. I can go from here to Africa, back and forth. You know, if wherever black people are, I'm fine. But we have to think that somebody out of our race, who always gonna have our intentions involved, has to help us to do. We got to get the best out of that. See, those policies don't mean anything when you can do for yourself. And I'm going to say this before I go, Dr. Rogers. I talked to Sister Dee Dee for a few seconds, and I talked to Brother Lush for a little bit, and it was great that we have this radio program because we would have never met. Okay. See, that's the good thing of black people bringing each other together.
Yeah, we have to do that. We have to do that. Yep, you're right. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for that. And let me ask you, why did you give Biden the grade that you gave him?
I'm going to tell you why. Because I remember Biden was on his way out, and he had the brother from South Carolina, Clyburn, to bring him through. And what he did, he was saved by a man. See, that was the thing. People didn't like the Clintons, but they could always depend on the black church and black people.
Mm-hmm.
Biden took a page out of that playbook and said, you know what? Black people get me elected in America. And we got to realize the power of our vote. That's what's going on now with California.
California. Okay.
See, they realize that black people, when they vote, they get the right person in. They could take this. They're learning that now. They don't like that now. And guess what? Their race is disintegrating. So I'm saying to you that once he got there, he looked out for poor folks. Stimulus packet. He looked at the education process. Check it out. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's be for real. He looked out for children. Let's be for real. He did an infrastructure packet. All he got to get for the Republicans is a vote on it. That's important. He ain't been in there a year. What's his problem is his COVID and what happened in Afghanistan, which he had no control over.
Right.
He inherited that.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
I give him a C plus, B, and that's not bad because guess what, Dr. Ross? When I was undergrad, my average undergrad was never over 2.7.
Okay.
It was good. Graduate school was something different.
Were you in the military?
Never.
Okay.
The military I was in was called the FOI.
I got you. That's the best one. Yeah.
The military training of the Nation of Islam. That's
okay.
The best military to me on the planet. That's me.
All right. All right. Brother West, why did you give him what you gave him?
I gave him a D, man, the way he handled this COVID thing. They're trying to make it mandated that everybody take vaccines. Now he want to have OSHA start getting on employers. Overall, I just give him a D, man. I'm tired. I'm sick of all of them. I don't care if Joe Biden or Trump, all of them. Their time is up. I agree with Brother Timothy. Their time is up. And the way to get them, the way to beat them, Pop, all us move down south, man. Most of everybody on this call, their mom and dad from Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you see what happened in Georgia. Everybody just move back south. We take the south, man. Okay, we can do it, man. We just more black people in America than they tell it, man. okay? They want to make us think we the minority, but we the majority, especially on the planet, man. We got them, Pop. They time up, man. They okay. time is up. They do.
Okay, Brother West. All
yeah,
right.
One more thing. The clarinet player. You got any of his music, man? I know he got some of his music around.
Say it again. Your voice pulled it out. Say it again.
The highlight of the brother that you said played music. Okay, I know some of his music around, man. It'd be nice if you to find one of his songs or something. You know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There is some things. Yeah. You know, a lot of it is. Has been recorded because I did look for something. It's still on that older sounding equipment. Yeah, nothing has been modernized yet, unfortunately. I know a brother that's trying to modernize a lot of that older music like that and put it at the Smithsonian and places like that where it can be played. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's an interesting story. It really is. Okay.
So, do you have any? Did you have any descendants or somebody? He left any children or family? Somebody probably got some of his music, man.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm pretty sure it is. I didn't search that far yet, but that's a good thing to do. A good project to look at.
Oh yeah, one more thing about Biden, man. Okay, what he should do for that Joe Manchin guy is flat out tell him whoever we gonna find candidate to run against him in West Virginia, man. That's how you do that politics, man.
Right. Right.
Say we gonna primary him. You know what I'm talking about?
What do you think about the brother that's fighting against the California situation? You know, he's representing conservative ideology and fighting against that.
Oh, Lee Elder, man. He just another a coon clown, man. He's just a clown, a clone, a coon, man. I heard on the show that he said something about the white. Slave monster should get reparations, man. He's a clown. Man.
Yeah, Elders has always been bad. He's been real bad. He's obviously a dog pony show kind of thing. The monkey grinder, as you said. Yep, he is.
Yeah.
Put the nickel in the slot and let him dance. You're right.
That's a good one, Doc.
Uh-huh. Yep, you're right.
Nickel in the slot, let him dance.
Elders about that. Yep. Now, Brother White, now I know you're in the military, right? You were in the military, correct?
Yeah.
What is your thoughts on Biden handling that Afghanistan stuff? Did he handle that properly from your perspective, a military person?
Well, I was in the military, but I wasn't of the military.
Okay.
At the time that I joined the military, I was just hanging out in the streets and partying, and my mother was getting on my back. And I knew she didn't want me to go in the military, so I went down to the office to get some material and brochures to lay around the house so she would leave me alone. And when I finished with that recruiting officer, I was being sworn in.
Okay. All right.
I never intended to go in.
I got you. I read an article recently about the concern in terms of black soldiers in that Afghanistan thing. That's something we're not getting the full story of. And I haven't gone further in it. I didn't have time to really get further into it and really research that to find out exactly what they meant. But there seemed to have been some mistreatment areas, which doesn't surprise me, when they were beginning to decamp and come back to the States in reference to black soldiers. And so they were, like, obviously in harm's way very heavily.
Dr. Rogers, I was in the military from 1963 until just about 1966.
Right, that's Vietnam, right?
And I spent a lot of time in Hawaii and stuff.
Okay.
And all the black soldiers that I knew, that we all hung around, none of them were patriotic.
Okay.
There was nothing about the flag. A lot of them were there because they couldn't find jobs out. But there was no patriotism.
Right, that's true. Mm-hmm.
There was no patriotism. In Hawaii, it was very racist. I had a couple of friends, one from South Carolina, one from St. Louis. We would get together, do a little drinking, go up and wait for the movie to turn out. When them white people come out, we start knocking people down.
Okay.
That was our our fun activities.
Right. And I agree.
There was no patriotism. There was a strong disconnect between the white people and black white soldiers and the black soldiers.
Yes, that's true. That's exactly right, because it was there was always the mistreatment issue involved. And in the case where particularly if you have a commanding officer who has control over your every move, obviously they can do what they want to do. And I've heard many horrible stories about that, you know, over the years. And, you know, and even at that time, a lot of it prior was living in, operating out of those segregated armies, you know, and things that you had to do. And a lot of that was that most of the black soldiers were given the duties of serving the white officers and things like that, you know, and they were made butlers and cooks and cleaned the bathroom, latrine, those kinds of duties. And so, and I don't think the story has been written and told properly over the history of all of that, and particularly in the modern era of warfare in America, be it starting with Vietnam, Desert Storm, you know, and then Afghan. So this article that I saw is something to do with when the soldiers were preparing to come home and some of the things that were being done against the black soldiers at that time. And I just thought maybe if anybody, I don't know if anybody else has saw that article and looked at it, but it was horrible story kind of idea. So anyway, all right. So I think we basically heard from those who were interested in giving us their opinion of that. And the reason I asked for that is because of the fact that, you know, when Trump was in office, we went after him and we knew that he was going to be a problem. And obviously, I don't think Biden's much different. You know, it's just that he doesn't have all that rhetoric that Trump has. And so it just makes it seem a little bit different when you're doing it in that way. So anyway, I think that as we move on in our discussion, I want to talk about something else. But before I do that, I want to take a quick break. We're at the top of the hour.
Yeah.
And we want to take just a quick break, and we'll come right back. And we're going to talk a little bit about another area I think that's very important for us to understand, and where, particularly when it comes to our children in terms of education, and how all of this racism is hurting that system. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come right back.
Want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl. You've been acting different, I've been told. So they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Okay, my brothers and sisters, we are back.
Hey, Doc, can I say something, Doc? I like your selection of music. You don't even have a DJ. You do a good job without it. You're your own DJ, your own host, your own guest. You got it going on, brother. You got some good
appreciate
stuff.
Appreciate that, brother.
You had Otis last week. You got the blues. You got some jazz. I love it.
Well, you see, there's a reason for that. Our music, African American music, is the essence of our history and our culture.
Without a doubt.
That is the one thing that we can count on as a soothing for our souls, going through some of all of the torment that we deal with in this country. The music can help us, and it has helped us. And it has been a very strong fortress, you know, for us in these rough times. So we can sit down and put on some John Coltrane, and we've used it to express our protests at things. I opened up the show with the big payback.
Mary Baraka. You also did a Mary Baraka. My main man, I walked and talked with him, and he was great. And James Brown, the Godfather. He did the Godfather.
That's right. And most of our musicians were very conscious. And even when you got to the love stuff, you know, you got to have some love in our country, in our families. We got to bring that love back. We don't love each other no more, man. And that music helped us in terms of that mother. That's another whole discussion, but that's why I do that. I do the music because this is, like I said, the essence of our culture and our understanding, our experience. And the musicians a lot of times were protest artists, just like I read that brother who wrote the symphonies and the orchestras. There's another one that I want to talk about at some point in time is the great Scott Joplin.
Oh, yeah. I like Scott.
Scott Joplin wrote the first black opera ever. It was called Tremonisha. And it's dealing with our struggles.
I have a question. What about Beethoven? Because Beethoven did some radical things. Fifth Symphony. That's major. He did some stuff.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think that's got to be researched a little bit better. I'm not so quick to give in that where it just hasn't been researched in the way that we need to look at in terms of actually who was Beethoven. I know he had features and looked African, but I think we need to deal with that a little bit.
I heard Dr. Bridges bring something out one time. It was interesting because I think he was quoted to some of the stuff I read. He was Flemish. He had blood in him. He had our blood in him. I tell you, I believe he had our blood in him.
Right. So I would think that he would, you know, and I think that, like I said, that needs to be looked at and researched a little bit more. But anyway, our musicians have always been a source of political protests. Great Paul Robeson, you know, we know that.
Even
Ray Charles. All of them protested our plight, and they used their music and their platforms to argue.
Stevie Wonder, whatever.
Yeah, so
Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, definitely Stevie.
All of them. So that's why we wanted. That's why we do that, and that's why we looked at that. If the whole civil rights movement was based on music,
Aretha Franklin.
Motivated people to move forward. Was that so? That's like I said. That's another discussion. But anyway, I wanted to just mention that we do have our other programs here on the Black Reality Think Tank Network. As I told you on Thursday, Warriors Way, keeping up the fight with Brother Kwasi Kraft, who is the host of that program, comes on at 6 o'clock on the Blog Talk system. And you just need to go to the Black Reality Think Tank website, Facebook webpage, and look for the link that will open up that program and allow you to listen. And then on Saturdays, Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, we have Black Sister Talk with Miss LaWanda Chambers, Whether You Can Breathe. That is also on the Blog Talk system. And again, you can find out where that's located by simply going to the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page. And then on Saturday evening, 6 o'clock, the Milwaukee Council of Seniors Elders Council, that program airs at 6 o'clock, and it is a dynamic forum and discussion. They talked extensively last week about abortions. That program is hosted by Dr. Janine James, Brother Quojo Robinson, and Sister Dee Dee Conley. And so they provide that. So that's at 6 o'clock on Saturday. And then obviously, as you know, Tuesdays, we're here at the Black Reality Think Tank. So please take a look at our other programs. And then the Time for Awakening has a list. We had Brother Oshie's African Perspectives that comes on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Brother Elliot's program that comes on Fridays and Sundays. And I'm going to have a full listing of what some of the other ones, the excellent program that comes on Mondays evening that deals with our psychology as African people. It is run by, hosted by the Cambones, and it's a dynamic discussion as well. So we again, as I said earlier, we are trying to shake the trees, make things happen, give platforms to fight, talk, discuss, and to make things happen, and to encourage agenda building using critical analysis and critical thinking. And that's kind of what we want to do. We don't have the answer, all the answers. Everybody's not right. But, you know, we at least discuss it and bring ourselves together and talk about those things that are going on. So we appreciate all of you for your support over the years. We've been now about 5 years doing this. And so we really appreciate that. Appreciate Brother Elliot out of Philadelphia for the work that he's done in getting this platform together. I wanted to talk about something real quickly. And I really will, and when I say talk about it, I want to ask for suggestions on how to do this. And maybe have we thought in depth about this idea and this situation? And if you have thought about it in depth, what is it that's going to be done? And what is it that we can do as African people to sort of correct some of this problem? And this is a simple one. It's nothing complicated. COVID and the damage that it has created and done is we really don't clearly, I think, understand the depth of what that disease has done and the ramifications across social, political, and educational platforms, the storm that it has created. And one of the ones that I see very clearly that's devastating is the one that it has done with our children in terms of the educational process and what has had to happen and what the damage that they've had to go through by having to do virtual learning and being able to do some of the normal things that you know need to do in the educational environment and system, and the fact that it hasn't too much changed, even though schools, the students are back. But I was looking at the news this evening, and they were saying that there's so many kids with COVID that the children's hospitals are overrunning. So I think that somewhere our community needs to provide some kind of a corrective educational process that we can use to sort of help families. And I mean, obviously, you've got to allow the families to want you to help them and to be done. But I've talked to some mothers and who said that they would welcome looking at somebody that wanted to help their students catch up. They're behind and just even the basics, not just our studies and our culture, but math and reading and some of those things that they're so far behind and have not been able to catch up. And I think that we as a community have to contribute or have to come forward with that. And I thought this would be a good forum just to give your input. I'm not asking anybody to do anything specifically, but just give an idea of what we can do to correct that. Reading. A lot of children have not read during the years of since COVID has been run rampant. They didn't do that through the virtual system. Parents had to work. A lot of times the kids were left at home with under the guidance of others, or either in some cases alone, and they're not going to read. They're not going to sit and put the attention into it. I watched a couple of my grandkids doing the virtual thing, watched them doing it. They, one of them had TV on and the television, had the TV down real low, watching something on YouTube, and then doing their homework or doing the lesson with the teacher there. And I'm asking them, why do you have that television on and you're trying to do the school? You can't do both of those at the same time. And, I can do it. No, you can't. And so I indicated that they had to turn that off, and they did, angrily. But it's okay. I don't care. But anyway, I'm just thinking about on a widespread system, what is that going to do? And then when it comes time now to get ready to go to a higher education system, are they going to be ready to do that? Are they going to be ready to fall into some of the positions and businesses? Are they going to be able to pass the exams and tests that this country has to prohibit you from getting into systems and doing things? Where are they going to fare? What's going to happen, 20 years from now, 25 years from now? What's the impact of this going to have? And it's widespread. It's not just one or two or three kids. It's a lot of kids that have been that way. So anyway, I wanted to open up this for a discussion to see what your thoughts may be. We have the host of the Warriors Way on. I'm going to ask Brother Kwazi to start us off. Brother Kwazi, do you think, first of all, have you thought about it at that depth of the long-term impact of COVID on education system and our children and their learning? And if so, what do you think that we can do now to correct some of that, if possible, if anything? What do you think?
Well, I can tell you, recently I haven't gone through all that and how they treat you differently based on your status as an individual, your insurance. A number of things happen to come into play on how they treat you. Mm-hmm. And when I think about educational system, with the kids in school, and reading is like paramount. And that's one of the things that they do the least of, or they do it in a way which you really can't monitor whether or not somebody's really reading or understanding. And when I say that, I mean, they're doing this on a computer, and they, they got their headsets on, they're doing things that way versus reading out loud. And what that does for other people in the classroom to hear somebody else enunciate a word because this person said it like that, mm-hmm. that person, which is correct. It is just so much more that people get out of it, but they've gotten away from a lot of that process for expediency and they feel that they're doing things better. And like I said, we talked about the COVID, with the paranoia about the COVID, wearing the mask, kids are getting more headaches in school. They just have to find a way mm-hmm. to the kids of being paranoid about the COVID. And because it's just so much misinformation out there, and there's nothing really consistent, but again, other than people getting sick and how they're going to remedy that, I just don't know. The trust just isn't there. And so people aren't going to do the things that they need to do. I was having a conversation with some people earlier, and they're like, they're going to make sure they get vaccinated just because they They don't really believe in all of this, but in consideration for some of the older people that have health issues when COVID affects them, you know, and right. it's just so much information out there that known and not known, and they're deciding what they want to put out there. And, and that's what makes it scary, because we've never really been able to trust government with that kind of information.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Sister Dee Dee, you are a mother, even though your children are adults, but you have a grandmother, young children. How do you feel about this, the impact of this possibly from COVID, the lack of quality education, and how far back this is going to push some of our children in terms of their learning and being able to be prepared for the future? What are your thoughts on some things that we can do?
Yes, Dr. Rogers, and good evening again, family. Hey. Dr. Rogers, I feel like, you know, I feel like all this being done and being, everything that's being done is being by, it's by design.
Okay.
It's by design. And it's going to push our children back forward, but I mean backwards, but we must keep trying to push them forward. And I tell you, I have ordered some desks for my two little grandchildren, because and I'm going to try to homeschool them. You know, they're going to have their computers and stuff. I'll go to the school and get their computers or whatever. My sister's also homeschooled her grandchildren. But Doc Rogers, all this is by design.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel there's a lot of subliminal messaging, I probably didn't pronounce that right, going on. There's a lot of fear-mongering also going on. I'm not just saying that that's not out there. I'm not that naive. I know it's out there, but who put it out there?
Right.
You know, we know who put it out there. Here's a, here's our government been what? Doing us in since the beginning of time. And I read a script that Henry Kissinger said, if you mandate these vaccines, we send out the herd, the people will fall for anything. Then you could do anything to them. And then we can sterilize their grandchildren. I believe I sent you that script. And he just said this in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all kinds of stuff we as adults aren't paying attention to. So we can teach and tell our children, or tell whom all that will listen. My son keeps telling me, Mom, stop putting alarm clocks in the cemetery. I said, but hey, somebody had one in there on me, and I woke up. So, you know, I'm going to still kind of keep putting them out. But still, we have to try to grab who we can grab.
Right.
If we can try to, if we can get these children, like Brother Kwasi just said, help them read. You don't read sitting in silence. You don't read with no headphones and all that. I mean, you know, you need to even hear yourself. So you know how you know, you need to hear yourself. And you need to read around, read amongst each other, you know, so someone can correct you.
Right. Right.
You know, even when I read, I get correction. I love it, because I don't want to continue to saying something wrong. So how can we correct them? And here they are reading up on the headphones, you know, doing everything in silence. No, white folks want you to do stuff in silence. This is all by design.
Okay.
It's all by design. 10, 20 years from now, they're hoping that our children are right where they want them to be. And the show ain't sitting up under them. And we can keep on trying to romanticize and try to get in when we don't fit in. Trying to get with people that can't stand your butt.
Right.
Don't want to laugh and grin, hee-haw, and this and that, but on the backside, can't stand you. And always at the drawing board trying to figure out a way. Damn, I thought I knocked the back to the drawing board. Still trying to figure out what to do. First it was us. Now all you hear, if you think about it, now all you hear now is our children. Now they're starting to talk about the babies. That's because whatever their agenda is, they're on it, and they got to get it done. It's something coming. It's some more coming down the pike. We just don't know about it. But I tell you what, we better start listening up and start preparing. Mm-hmm. We better start waking up, because it's coming. It's always something with. There's always something. These some hateful, evil devils.
All right.
It's all something.
You won't get an argument from me. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Protect the babies. Protect your children, family. Protect each other. We got to look out for each other.
All right.
Look how they got. Look how they got us now. When you out in the stores or whatever, we look at each other now all crazy and won't even speak. I don't care if you got six masks on, speak. Throw your hand up. Hey, what's up, brother? Hey, my sister, how you doing? Don't even speak. We acting just like them, looking upside the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you, Doc Rogers.
Okay.
I didn't mean to
all right. No, that's okay. That's all right. That's what I asked you for. Area code 773-874. You got any thoughts, any questions, any comments about this idea? 773-874. Okay. All right. 919-638. Any thoughts or questions you might have?
Oh. Evening, Dr. Rogers. How are you?
Oh, good evening. Good evening, Reverend. How you doing? What are your thoughts?
Oh, it has been a disaster, particularly for those who are in the lower grades. It is very difficult for them to learn and to stay focused. That's what the in-person teaching was about. One of the things that we also have to remember that in the rural areas, there was even a problem at first trying to get internet access. So a lot of this has a lot to do with economic problems as well. This educational thing is tied directly to the economic concept of what happened with the COVID vaccine. And one of the things that some people are doing is that they are offering enrichment programs. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Somebody's making some noise in the background. So, go right ahead.
One of the things I have seen people do, especially retired teachers and teachers who have the time, are opening up enrichment programs.
Okay.
And that helps a lot as well. Of course, there's a minor cost because they have to rent spaces to do that.
Yes.
But they are doing something in this area to try to combat that by opening up those enrichment programs. But it has been a disaster, particularly in the rural poor areas where people were so far behind. Those kids are at least a year behind.
Yes, they are.
If not more. And I don't know how to even promote them from one grade to the other without having any kind of testing or anything to know whether they've learned anything for that year. But it has been a disaster. It has really been a disaster.
That's an interesting point. You're right about that. And to go coupled with that, we've mentioned this before on the Black Reality Think Tank here, is there's something else that's going on that's very, very subtle, but I think it has a lot of effect on all of this, is that I don't know if any of you have been into your libraries recently and have just gone in there. I know a lot of them have been closed, but some of them are open. But there's a lot of different strange rules about getting a book. But there is nothing in there on African-American history and studies. Nothing. And I've gone to the ones right before COVID that were in the heart of the Black community, and there's nothing in there. I went and asked the librarian, did she have a copy of the autobiography of Malcolm X? And she said, no, we don't have that. And I named about four other books, and the same thing. I don't have that. No, we don't have that book. So if you don't go to the main branch, and they have it down in their archive, and then they'll send it over to that library in some cases where you can get a copy. I've had to do things like that. And even that's very limited. They don't really have anything outstanding. And also, I don't know if you notice also that a lot of our authors of the ilk that, you know, we had in the past, there's a lot of stuff not being produced that really addresses some of the struggles of our community. You know, a lot of it is gender-oriented kind of material, LGBT material, a lot of that, but none of it is addressing things like families, family history, and family studies, economic studies. And I pay attention to that as a historian. to look at what, and I even called the librarian to ask. She said I should write a letter to the main librarian and make some suggestions to that. And the other place that you could even to try to get a book, and you know all the black bookstores, at least in this area, are gone. There's none. So, you know, I'm just we've been talking about the subtleness of things and how, you know, we just haven't paid attention. Very clearly, when one of the people, the family members of the Black Reality Think Tank, Dr. Bridges, who has been on, has a bookstore that we talked about for many years. That's nothing like that anymore. You know, his bookstore is closed, and there's nothing around there. Brother White, I don't know if you could know about that. I saw something in a paper, and I don't know where I saw that, but it was a black bookstore getting ready to open up in Durham. I don't know what kind of material they're going to have. I don't know if it's open. Have you been there yet? But that intellectual property, that intellectual history, that's so critical in trying to do community work like that and to do enrichment programs, the materials are missing. We're operating now a Saturday school. And we've had to create our own material because it's just not available like it used to be anymore. And so it's a real struggle. Let me go to 919-956. Caller, you have any comments or suggestions? 919-956. Okay.
Can I say something, Doc?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, Doc.
Go right ahead. Brother Timothy, we can't hear you.
Record your message after the tone.
Brother Timothy? Okay, 919-956, you had a comment? Okay, all right. Let me go back there. Brother White, do you know the bookstore I'm talking about in Durham?
I haven't heard anything about a bookstore. I have to do some research on that.
Yeah.
7 years ago.
There's a black bookstore in Durham that's supposed to open sometime soon, and I don't know where it's going to be, but you know, I just read the article.
I have to look into that because I haven't heard anything about it.
Sister Ann, do you know anything about that bookstore?
No, I haven't heard a thing about it.
Okay, oh, that's interesting. Where did I read it? Say it again, Ann. I'm sorry.
Haven't heard anything about it, not unless Dr. Bridges is planning on reopening, and I haven't heard him say anything.
Okay, yeah, that's what I wanted to ask him, but I haven't talked to him in a minute or two. Brother Lush, who's on, he's definitely been sending around some material that's very interesting and informing and empowering to his network of folk, which is good, and I think that's clearly one way that we can add to this enrichment. The materials that we get to. Brother Lush, any thoughts about this? I know you came on. I don't know if you understood what we were doing. I was kind of talking about how much of a thought process we as a community have given to the damage that COVID is doing to the education of our children, in particular the young children, as Reverend Rogers talked about. He said it's really damaging to them, and the fact that they may be behind in math and reading. And the parents have to work, you know, mothers, you know, a lot of children are in single female-headed households, and they have to work, and they don't have the amount of time to put into it that maybe you were used to, and so these children are behind. So what's going to happen when they get ready to have to take the SAT and all these other system things that this system places on our folk to get them to get access to institutions of higher learning and things of ability. So what are your thoughts about that? What is we as a community can we do to address that deficit? If anything, what are your thoughts? Because you're an educator.
Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and good evening, everyone who's on the line today. There's so many little things that can be done, I think.
Okay.
For example, there are five basic questions. Hello?
Yeah, somebody's coming in. Keeps cutting.
Did you hear me? Did you hear me?
Okay, now I do, but Brother Timothy, just hold up a minute. Somebody else is talking. Okay. Go right ahead, Brother Lush.
Real quick. There are five basic questions. Who, what, when, where, how, and for what? I think starting with learning how to question and using the foundations of those six basic questions that you can really be able to get answers to questions, right? And being able to work through a discussion or work through a topic matter in order to get the kind and type of satisfaction that's needed. That's why I can remember a while back, Dr. Rogers, in that what will it take for us, those of us who have gone through these halls of academia, to be able to create something for ourselves so we can evaluate ourselves.
Right.
And so it takes a lot, I'm sure it does, but for the rudiments right now, for the beginnings, if we can learn how to question and seek the kinds and types of answers to those questions, that'll be a start, I think.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And you can do that. And it doesn't take a lot. It just takes time and effort to sit down with a group of young people and do that. Reverend Rogers, are you still on? Reverend Rogers, are you still?
I'm still here.
Okay. Now, historically, the Black Church did a lot of that. As a matter of fact, the Black Church was the savior.
Please leave me a message, and I'll get back with you as soon as I can. Peace.
Just a second. I've got to mute some folk. The Black Church was a pivotal role in doing some of that. As a matter of fact, a lot of the early Black HBCUs started out of Black churches, like Tuskegee, Morehouse, and all of those. What are some of the thoughts that happen now? I know the Black churches have its own set of problems, and COVID has sort of kicked it back, a little bit. You want to comment on the general nature of that role that the church has had historically?
I do, sir.
Brother Timothy.
Are you talking about the education?
Yeah, the education plan of being able to play a role, because it does have a facility.
As I said earlier, a lot of people are getting the spaces out of churches. Churches are donating spaces for them to have these enrichment programs. They also are donating spaces for them to have meals they can either pick up or delivered. Also, they are providing spaces for internet access as well. That was one part of North Carolina, particularly southern North Carolina, where they had to use school buses to in order for them to put some type of internet structure in the school bus.
Yes, right.
And park it in one of those communities so the children could have access. So there are a lot of work that the church can be doing, and of course there's always more work to be done, but the church has always been there as a part of the community. You cannot separate the Black church and the Black community.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think that's a help, because I think if we can, maybe if someone wanted to approach somebody in the system and suggest that they would be willing to support and work with them in having an enrichment outreach center to do some work like that on Saturdays or whatever day. And like I said, I know COVID is still active, And we got to be very careful still, you know, as we see you here. Don't know how this is all going to end out. But, yeah, you're right. I think that can be done. And if push comes to shove, could still do it virtual.
Dr. Rogers, you did hit the nail on the head when you said it has to have parent involvement. This is something that parents are going to have to go for and seek after.
Yeah.
In order for it to work in a way, parents have to be involved.
They have to be,
and they have to approve of their children being a part of that kind of program as well.
Right. You're right. Because our little the Saturday school that we are operating now cannot be done without parents. And as a matter of fact, a lot of our parents come to the they actually come to the sessions. And they're virtual. The sessions are virtual. They participate in the sessions themselves, and they're learning too. So we try to pick a time that's conducive for them to be able to do that. We do it on Sunday evening, it's you're right about that. So okay, I appreciate that because, like I said, you know that the church has played that role. It has had a pivotal role in doing that. Brother Timothy, you had something you wanted to say?
Yes, I was just saying, I don't know if you heard me, but I said that, talked about the Church of Africa, that Saturday school. We always talk about that. That's good. That's in Philadelphia here. It's ran by Tony Montero, Dr. Tony Montero, Lincoln man, as a matter of fact.
Right.
And I was saying that that when we have a black superintendent, we have a president of Temple University, he's black, and the president of community college. There's no way in the world why we should have a problem with literacy here, but those positions, they got to do outreach to save some of these youth. Now, jobs are one thing that we need, but giving people education is another. And I just want to say that, and parent participation, like everybody's saying. So right. I'm in line with, I think all of us on the same page, and that's important. And like you said, Doc, if it wasn't for the Presbyterian Church, there would be no Lincoln University. If it wasn't for the church, it wouldn't be no Morehouse. We go on and on and on. So
right,
the church
exactly.
Has always been a vital instrument or organ. It has been the heartbeat of our community.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Very important institution. Let me go over to New York City here a minute. Brother Barron, Barbara Barron, would you care to have a...
Yes.
Anything you'd like to say or add to this conversation?
Yes. How you doing, Dr. Rogers? It's Jay.
Oh, Jay. How you doing, brother? All right.
I'm all right. Listen, I think what you're doing with the Saturday Academy is excellent. I mean, as far as the school ain't going to do anything to get your child back on grade level. It's already a wrap as far as that go. I mean, you dealing with a situation with, you know, teachers and administration having these fights over COVID.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, it's just basically a situation where you're going to have to take responsibility for your kids. I mean, you can't expect your enemy to educate your kids.
Educate your children, you're right.
Now, as far as the SAT and all of that goes, I think they're bypassing that for the next couple of years because of this cold COVID situation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, those that are homeschooling their kids, there's a lot of programs out here now for that. So the main thing with that is you just have to seek out the information.
Right.
And
good
also
point.
You have to be willing to spend the necessary money for tutors and materials.
Good
but
point.
I would tell anybody that some of the programs that you should look at that would be most helpful on the internet is Khan Academy. I mean, as far as helping with homeschooling, I think math wise Khan Academy probably has the best program. And at this point in time, I would think that they would be able to help with most subjects. But
okay,
if one was to start, as far as math goes, it would be Khan Academy. and whatever services that they have. And also the main focus should be on reading comprehension.
Right.
Also grammar and writing. And if you could get the kids to function on that level, then everything else should be basically kind of easy. And there's programs out there to assist you with that. It's just a matter of you as a parent spending enough time to research the information.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And then, you know, being on top of the kid and making it interesting in regards to the application of the learning process. But no, I wouldn't. If I was a parent, I would never send my kids to any type of public schooling at all until they reach college age.
Right.
Myself.
I got you.
I wouldn't send them.
Very good. I thank you so much, Brother Jay. You been doing okay, though?
Yeah, I've been doing good. How you been, Dr. Rogers?
Doing good. Doing good. No problems, no complaints.
You guys can catch up soon, all right?
Yeah, we do. We really do. Yes, indeed.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much for that input.
You're welcome, brother.
Yeah, I just saw you just logged in, Sister Yan, but I definitely would not want to close out without having to see if you want to say anything. We're talking about our community being aware of the damage that COVID is going to do in terms of educating our children and preparing them for the future. What is it that we should do as a community to assist in trying to do some of that, and just how well we recognize the impact of it. So any thoughts you have about that? I don't know if you heard any of that discussion, and I've been kind of going around the room asking how they feel. What are your thoughts?
Well, since I came on really late, I won't get in the conversation.
Okay.
I'll just say what I always say, you know, the things that we have done that worked during segregation and in the 60s when we did for ourselves, we had a black nationalist movement, so we educated ourselves, we had our own businesses during those periods. Let's go back to doing what works.
Okay. All right. Okay. And then very clearly, also, one other additional piece that goes with this is the traumatic nature of our community right now with some of all of this violence that's going on in our communities. There's going to be some damages that are going to relay to our children. You know, some of the horror stories that... That's just interesting. Like I said to Brother Timothy, I did not realize that Philadelphia has the second highest murder rate in America behind Chicago. And I think that's something else, too, and I think that can be looked at. But anyway, you don't have time to do that now.
That's right, sir.
Yeah.
That's right. You're right. It's terrible.
I think there's more
Dr.
to that.
Dr. Rogers, can you do something on that? Because every city, you know, where there's a high concentration of black people, they're saying the same thing.
Right.
You know, the highest murder rates. And we really should look deeper into what's going on with that.
Right, exactly, yeah. And then
I agree.
And then, right, you said, and then the gravity of it, you know, where, like here in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, a grandfather beat his 12-year-old grandson to death with a hammer. Because he stole some money out of his pocket. So what is the stress that's obviously being passed on? So I know there's a lot we can talk about with that. Sister Marquita, I saw you came on, you just came on too. That's what we were talking about. We were talking about what is it that can be done to empower our community. You had a very wonderful system that you were using, pre-COVID. By doing weekend workshops with your art gallery and bringing the community together. But what are your thoughts about, first of all, how much depth do you see that we've given to the idea that the damage that COVID is going to do by our children not being able to learn in the way they used to?
Oh, thank you, Dr. Rogers, and all of your listeners, participants, for inviting me on. I really, there's a lot that I would like to say, but due to the time constraints, I guess I'll be very brief. I really would like to, I'd like to just wait until our next, until we, you know, come up with our next show, and maybe that'll be part of our topic.
Yeah.
To just kind of share some of my thoughts, because I could go on and on.
Okay. All right. Well, good enough. Let me go right back, go back to the Durham number, 919-956. Is there anything you'd like to add to this conversation?
All right, peace, brother. How you doing?
And I thought that was you all the time. I just, when I tried to call you, you didn't answer. But anyway, how you doing?
All right, I was trying to get in touch with a brother, a friend of mine who was starting a school. And when you called on me, I was on my other line trying to get to him. That's why I missed
okay,
you.
Okay, okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah, a good friend of mine is starting a school. But okay. What I wanted to just say is that, as Sister Benicia said, this is a time for us to go back into ourselves. And since the COVID has separated us, as a people, as families, as friends, as institutions, everything. This is the time for us to go back and begin to do for ourselves. As Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, this is really the time to do it. And as you said, too, in terms of Saturday schools, I think that because of the virtual learning and because of what's going on, and I want to ask the question, too, what you're saying about the Black Bookstore in Durham, too.
Okay.
But because of what's going on in the system and us being separated due to the virus, this is the time for us to forget integration and forget going to their schools and learning their forms of history and math and drama and science. It's time for us to go and separate ourselves from our enemies. We've talked about it. We've said things about it. And we did it in the 60s with the Freedom Schools, with the Black Panther Schools,
right,
and the Breakfast
right.
Program. And the various communities. So it's really, I think this is a good time for us to begin to go into ourselves and do what's necessary. Also, another reason is because of what you said, and that is when you go into the libraries today and when you look at the books that are out there and that people have access to, there's nothing about us.
Nothing.
So
nothing.
We can't depend on the system now. This COVID has shown us that we cannot depend on the system because we're not really a part of the system because we're separated due to the virtual learning and the Zoom calls and the virtual training.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're separate, then this is a time for us to begin to educate ourselves and make the best of it. And that's really what I see in the whole thing, because it's not like we can go to a school in Brooklyn, New York, in a section of Harlem or a section of Brooklyn or a section of Northwest section or Washington, D.C., and then go into the integrated schools. But this virtualism has separated us. And since we are separate, then this is time for us to begin to study and learn on our own and to educate ourselves. I think this is what we need to use.
Great.
But, you know, can I jump in real quick, Dr. Rogers?
Go right ahead.
That's a good idea. I mean, I like what you're saying, Brother Briggs, but the thing is, how can we motivate a community that isn't that educated in terms of who they are or who we are? How do we even motivate them to even want to move in that direction? You see what I'm saying? But how do we even get there when, you know, I don't want to get started. That's the question.
That's a good question. Good question.
Can I say something about that?
Well, let Dr. Bridges answer that, and then I'll come back to you, Sister Bernice.
Oh, okay.
You want to answer her?
Yeah, I was going to say, too. Sister Marquita is right about that. How do we get to them? And that's the thing which goes back to your program and our media and our mass distribution of information. People don't know that. Sister Marquita is right. They don't know that. But somehow, and I really probably can't answer a question, but somehow we have to get the word to our people that this is the time to educate ourselves, because they really don't know that. And
mm-hmm.
she's right about that. And I understand it, because we're separate anyway. So since we're separate and don't have to worry about integration or being in the classroom with Hispanics and with white people and all this, we can go ahead and go for ourselves. But the question is, like you said, that requires some thought. We need to get to our people and let them know this is the time to do
right.
it. And
that's exactly right.
All right, maybe Benicia White wants to say something
okay.
about that, but yeah.
Go ahead, Sister Ruth.
Yeah, Bruce, brother, you're right on point as usual, you know. And by the way, greetings to everybody. I didn't get to greet everybody. You know, we have so many influences by them coming at us from every which way, everywhere we turn, with all they're pushing homosexuality at our children, or LGB, whatever it is, mm-hmm. like a drug. You know, when crack was out, how the pushers used to push, and heroin, they're doing the same thing. And it goes back to what I was saying, you know, about building our own. When I went to an African-centered school, this is how my mother did it. They built it. My mother found out, and we went.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we complicate things in our heads because there's so much coming at us.
Right.
But that's what happened in the 60s. When we started building our own, our people came.
Right.
You know, so they say build it and they will come. You know, use our media. I really believe we have everything we need. We have the people that we need. A lot of conscious people doing great things. We just need to use what we have, and our people will show up. I believe that.
Right.
And the problem is we're not getting the kind of information today. The 60s was an entirely different atmosphere. There was an atmosphere of black consciousness, black culture.
Right, right. Black music.
Afros. African clothing, African music with Gil Scott-Heron, The Last Poets,
right, right.
Nina Simone. All the atmosphere was different. So as Sister Makita said, we got to figure out though how we get to them. Manishwa is right in terms of doing it, but the atmosphere is different now. This is an atmosphere of rap music and the atmosphere of as she right. said, LGBT and Latino X and all these kinds of things. And we weren't dealing with that then. You see, so the whole environment is different. So it's just a little more difficult today than it was then.
But you know what? At least we can start
give our people
a choice. I mean, all I want to say, at least we can start a movement.
Exactly.
And
right.
give our
people we had the Panthers on the corner with the Black Panther newspaper, we had the Nation of Islam with
sure
the Muhammad Speak.
Everything.
We had Stokely, we had Rap Brown. The whole atmosphere was just different. You're right, we have to start. We have to start, I agree.
Right.
But we got to realize there's a whole different environment surrounding us now than it was in the 60s.
Dr. Bridges, real quickly, because we got 2 minutes. The bookstore in Durham, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I really was surprised at Brother Herbie. I thought we had talked about it, but he said he didn't know about it, and I didn't think Ann knew about it. But she's probably right. She didn't know. But there's a couple of sisters. One is from South Africa, and the other one, I don't know where she's from, but they started a bookstore, and I don't know, but from what I understand, it's a bookstore that deals mainly with children's literature and also African-American fiction. And I see it now, based on what I know, and I don't know everything, but based on what I know, it's basically dealing with the fiction and children's books, but it's not.
Okay.
It's almost like the African studies departments around the country, which is another talk for another night. These African studies departments, these African studies departments, they're dealing with hip hop music. They're dealing with Ninth Wonder. They're dealing with rap music.
Right. I'm gonna have to stop you, Brother Bridges. Right? We only got ten seconds.
But the whole impact of culture and heritage and who we are as a people has been cut from what Nathan Hare and some of the other brothers and sisters were talking about in the 60s. That's not what's going on today.
I got it. It's 9 o'clock. I got to cut it off. But I appreciate
I'm through.
I appreciate that. Next week we'll be back. Thank all of you for what you did on today in our conversation. But have a good night. See you next week.
Peace.
Peace, family. Peace.
Peace and black power.
I'm glad we're black power.